Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and my guest is Dr. Peter Cookson, and he's going to talk about people's behavior during COVID. And let me start out, Peter, with a personal story. My friend Russell recently told me that one of his workmates was tested positive for COVID. So I said, well, we're going to get a test too. So we went a couple of days ago, and thank God, you know, we both, it was a negative report. So what scared me is the fact that COVID is on the increase again all over the country. How are people behaving during this uptick?
That's interesting. What I have been aware of, but just from reading the local newspaper that is published here in Schoharie County in a little town called Cobleskill, the headline of the newspaper, which came here yesterday, was that the number of COVID cases in this very small county has increased rather dramatically. And they point out exactly what you're underlining and are suspicious of, is that those persons who have been present at, and they list the taverns that were present there, and then they give the hours during which they are concerned about your presence in the tavern. Multiple taverns and the hours between and the days of, please contact the health department and get tested for COVID, because we are starting to see a dramatic increase in the number of cases in this very small community. And they are, I have identified not only the patrons of the taverns, but also people who have gone to weddings recently. So definitely the behavior of the individuals has been helping the virus to spread among the citizens here. The reports in the international news media that I heard on the television yesterday and then appeared in the Schenectady newspaper this morning was a dramatic increase in the number of cases in Europe, which have caused the leaders of those countries to revert back to the aggressive behavioral modifications, that is, masks, social distancing, number of persons present in a gathering or group, etc., going back to the methods that enabled them to have a much lower number of cases of COVID-19 earlier in the spring. Then they relaxed these measures of control, thinking that the virus would go away and behave itself. Well, it didn't. They're ascribing this increase in the number of cases not only to behavioral problems, that is, they're not wearing masks anymore and people are just gathering together and they're having weddings and other events that bring people together, and they're just spreading it from one to the other. It's, you know, what can you do about that? I don't know. All I can say, you know, I'm not going to suggest the best things, the best ideas have already been put out there. How do you convince the people to behave otherwise is something that better people than I have looked at and have so far failed to make any difference in terms of advisement. Although it did work for a while, I think that the virus was waiting for its opportunity. I know it sounds like I'm ascribing an intelligence to the virus, but you don't survive for a billion years without having some level of intelligence. And these viruses have been around for a very long time. I'm talking a billion or more years that they've been out there and been successful. So I anticipate that we're looking at a dramatic increase in the number of cases throughout the fall and the winter. What was also of interest to me recently is the number of cases of, or you know, the incidence of neurologic problems that have been found in individuals who are participating in the vaccine tests or the introduction of vaccines have takes place after a significant number of people have been vaccinated and they have been evaluated for complications of the vaccine and for effectiveness of the vaccine. And the first thing that begins to show up are neurological problems that the individuals who have participated in the vaccine development programs, and they haven't revealed whether or not those individuals who developed neurological problems were, you know, part of the placebo group, or were they part of the group that received the real vaccine? You know, it's part of the double-blind crossover study, or double-blind study. So that so far they have not revealed, but they've stopped the study, which suggests that somebody knows something's going on here, and we better not give any more people these vaccines because people are getting sick. I certainly remember the incidence of Guillain-Barré back in the 80s when swine flu vaccine was given out freely to individuals in the United States. And, or was that the late 70s? It was Jerry Ford's administration. A whole bunch of people got Guillain-Barré, and they, you know, were horrified, and they stopped the disbursement or the distribution of the swine flu vaccine on the basis of that. So it's just really interesting. Is why is the response of humans to the vaccine or to the virus neurological? And what brings to mind the fact that one of the primary symptoms of the COVID virus was a neurological symptom, that is loss of taste and smell. So this is a scary virus because the action of the virus, that is the fact that the virus is able to cause damage in the central nervous system, brings to my mind when the fact that the 1918-1919 virus was linked many years later to the incidence of Parkinson's disease in those individuals who had contracted the 1918 influenza virus, survived and lived on, and then in their older years developed Parkinson's disease, which suggests that either the defect was present ever since they originally contracted the virus, which I doubt, or the virus was living in the nervous tissue, the nerve tissue of the cerebellum in the brain, all those years without causing any problems. And there are lots of other examples of viruses being able to do that. The herpes zoster shingles virus is one that we are familiar with, and that is the virus stays there from the time that you had chickenpox as a little boy or girl, and then rears its head many years later under, or usually in a period of stress brought on by any number of things, either emotional or physical stress. So the virus is capable of doing that, and this virus may be very good at it. And if that's the case, then not only are we going to be looking at protracted periods of virus-related symptoms, and I can attest to that. By the way, my symptoms have almost completely gone away. In fact, they've gone, and who knows whether it's just time or whether it's the antiviral herbs that I've been taking religiously for 6 months now. You know, that seems like a long time for herbs to take to do the job, but so it may not have made any difference whatsoever. Maybe my immune system finally was able to overcome the virus and make it either go away or go into hiding. And if it's going into hiding, then I don't know what to expect down the road. And I think that those of us who are looking at these cases and have some historical background are also afraid that this virus may go into hiding. And if it does, then we may be looking at another pandemic of a sort that will not look like a COVID type of virus, but diseases of the nervous system that caused people to have other symptoms than those that, cough and runny nose and fever, et cetera, like Parkinson's disease coming down or Guillain-Barré syndrome that comes much later in life. So, you know, this is a very scary thing. There was a report in the news today about a group of students in Idaho who had arranged for a party and invited people to come to contract coronavirus with the expectation that they would develop antibodies and then be able to sell their blood to the pharmaceutical.
What? Wow.
Yeah, right. So, exactly. Kind of behavior is going on. What do you, golly, what do you do? If humans start behaving like that, you might just shake your head and wring your hands and say, now what do we do?
Right. The president has been conducting rallies, in a number of cities all over the country.
Yes.
And, people are going, they're not wearing masks. And it's kind of like that's a recipe for disaster. And Trump doesn't seem to think that's, he thinks it's okay, getting thousands of people together with no protection whatsoever. I just find that so baffling. What do you think?
Yes, right. And pardon me, I've dealt with this particular question in the past, not only in dealing with Mr. Trump, but also in dealing with other individuals who behave in a way that just doesn't make any sense at all. And so you have to conclude, or at least ask, whether or not these people are incredibly stupid. And most of the time, that's not the answer. They're not stupid. So then you have to say, well, why are they doing that? Just as you did, which is because you've already concluded he's not really stupid, but there's something else going on. And so, if you were to conclude that, well, he's just greedy and he just wants to be president again, so he'll do whatever he can in order to do that, well, that's a possible explanation, and that explains the kind of behavior, but doesn't explain the motivation and the disregard that would require for other human beings. So then I have to go back to why is there a subset of people on this planet, in this country, who would behave with total and utter disregard for their brothers and sisters?
Mm-hmm.
And I came to brothers and sisters. I met a gentleman at what we call the dump or the transfer site here in these small counties where you take your stuff on Saturdays. And he's a union person, a shop foreman for a union shop in Schenectady. And we got to talking, and he again reminded me of how union members refer to one another as brothers and sisters, and mm-hmm. how uncommon that is in the general population for people to consider the other citizens of the, in the grocery store or on the highway, as their brothers and sisters. And if you do that, then you tend to look after them and make sure that you don't do anything that would harm your brother or your sister.
Right.
And I think that that's gone. I haven't seen that in the general population, if ever. And so the question is, what else is going on here? And I have my own answers for that, but most people would laugh at me, and that's fine. They can laugh. But there's got to be another population on this planet who disregard the other humans and do not consider them as worthy of concern or of interest, and or consider them only worthwhile as far as workers. And
one thing I've got to say is there's still a percentage of people out there who still consider this a hoax. What do you say to those people? where over 200,000 people have died already.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, the answer to that is I would I've used this before. Anyhow, I look at the good people who count those persons who believe that, who still believe that this is a hoax, despite the fact that there's been an additional 215,000 deaths in this country as a result, a direct result from this hoax. And so you have to ask, who are these people who would totally ignore the fact that 200,000 of their brothers and sisters have died as a result of this hoax, and yet they continue to disregard it and consider it unimportant for them, or should they, or do not modify their behavior in any way because they don't care? So you ask the question, who are these people who would act that way towards their brothers and sisters?
Mm-hmm.
And this is another idea. It's a completely different idea when you start thinking about are they our brothers and sisters? And it's my opinion that if you carefully count them, count 100 people in this country, you will find that 18 or 19 of them will still believe that that's a hoax. And that's consistent tally after tally, poll after poll. 18 to 20% of the population will total disregard for the fellow citizens of this planet, if indeed they are fellow citizens. So you can read that as however you want, and just go, oh wow, boy, he's went off the deep end. Yeah, well, if you got a better explanation, please give it to me. And because Cynthia has just said she can't figure it out, neither can anybody else. So I offer an explanation. If you got something better, let me know. I'd love to hear it because it's very distressing.
So people are going to the rallies. You know, thousands and thousands of people to each rally. And I guess there's going to be a rally this evening. And, you know, Trump's up there and, you know, he's acting like Mr. Macho. Okay, I beat this, you can too. How irresponsible, wouldn't you say? Does he have no concern for the people who might vote for him in a couple of weeks?
Well, you would have to. Yeah, the answer to that question is yes. He has no concern for them. Or he is not stupid. But he has no concern for humans, period. And he realizes that he depends upon the humans in order to transfer him back into the White House, or to make sure that he stays there in the White House. And that's what humans are useful for, as far as he's concerned. Otherwise, any other concern is irrelevant. That's the point I'm making, to answer your question, because is there another answer?
Is there another answer? That's right.
Yeah, and I don't know of another answer. I haven't heard one, and that's why I ask your listeners to please contact you and say, here's the real answer. This is why that kind of behavior, why he does what he does. Oh, okay, fine. Thank you very much for the explanation. I didn't realize that. But
mm-hmm.
So far I haven't heard anything like that. Have you? No, you haven't. Otherwise,
no.
You would have told me. Right. So the answer to your question is no, he doesn't have any concern for the humans that come to that he is able to lure into the rallies that he has. And one of the other things that comes to mind right away is his insistence on a face-to-face type of meeting. And he needs to have that kind of face-to-face. When he was told that the next debate would have to be electronic or have to be virtual, then he was very much opposed to that, because that does not work for him. And so why doesn't that work for him? Well, there are other people on the planet who have a ability to mesmerize or enthrall other humans on the planet by their presence and by their words. We've certainly seen that before, and I don't want to pick somebody out right away, but there are individuals who are just amazing individuals that are enthralling to listen to, or captivating, or have charisma. And once you get away from them, the charisma disappears. But when you are in the presence of these individuals, you sense or feel that charisma. And I believe that Mr. Trump has that ability as well. I have had no contact with him personally whatsoever. But look at the people around him who are at the rallies and how thrilled they seem to be in his presence, and how happy they seem to be in his presence. And then explain that. No, either they don't have any ideas to the risk that they're taking to go to these rallies, or
right.
they do know what's going on, and the charisma of the speaker is so powerful that it overcomes any concern that they have otherwise. Heavy stuff,
so,
huh?
So, you know, you think people are they're letting their guard down because they're fatigued, they're COVID fatigued with all of the stuff that's going on. And that's one of the reasons why the virus is spreading again. Would you say that was accurate?
That's a very important concept or reality that needs to be addressed and be made aware of. There was a recent report in the local news as well as in the international television networks that reported that many, they did not give a specific number. If they did, I didn't jot it down, of nurses and support personnel in hospitals in Europe. The report came out of Paris, France, but they referred to a similar phenomenon occurring in Spain and Italy and Germany, where the nursing staff and the other staff in the hospitals, the people that keep the darn hospitals going, are going home and staying home. They're not coming back. They have not seen a respite or a break in the number of hours that they've been required to stay in the hospital. And so they're exhausted. Many of them have gotten sick, and an extraordinary number of them who did get sick died from the coronavirus. And this is not something that nurses expect to have to encounter when they go to the hospital to take care of sick people, to catch something and die, or to bring it home and watch your grandma, grandpa, father, you know, husband and children get sick as well. And this is what's happening in France. Although this morning the news was that they're going to go through the same process of locking down and requiring people to wear masks and so on. But they don't want to talk about the fact that the doctors and nurses are not coming back to the hospitals. They're exhausted. They're either dying or they're sick and unable to function. Will that happen here? Sure it will. When the number of cases rises to the point where hospitals, again, are filled to capacity and the support staff and the physicians and so on start getting sick. Trust me, that happens. That has happened here in this small community where highly regarded, very busy physicians have been very sick from the coronavirus. So what do they do? They stay home for a while, but do they pose a risk? They generally take care of themselves in terms of preventing the spread from themselves to their patients. That hasn't been so much of a problem as the problem of fatigue.
Do you think that the population overall is not aware of how risky it is for healthcare practitioners to be on the front lines?
Yes, I definitely do. And I see, even here in our Times Journal out of Cobleskill here, where they talk about the increasing numbers of COVID cases as a result of patients going to the tavern, nowhere do they talk about the support staff. Nowhere do they talk about the hospitals. Every so often you'll hear something about the hospitals are, quote, filling up, unquote, or a lot of people were admitted to the hospitals and so on. That's what you hear. But if you've ever worked in a hospital or watched the nurses in the hospital, these are dedicated people who have a limited amount of energy to put into this. How many 12-hour shifts can you do per day before you just collapse, go home and collapse?
Right.
There are foster care facilities where the aged folks come or expect to have people look after them at regular, you know, on a daily basis, many of them. These people are at severe, extreme risk. And there was another issue that came up that I would like to just put out there for a moment or two for people to think about, and that is that there's a disproportionate number of individuals who are of, quote, color, unquote, who have developed coronavirus and have suffered from the complications of coronavirus. And the more I studied this and the more I thought about it and looked into it, what I realized was that those individuals who are most at risk for developing the severe complications are those individuals whose dietary patterns leave a lot to be desired, put it that way. They live in food deserts and whose income is such that they survive on food that is low in nutritional value. Does that make sense? And many of them, because the low nutritional value gets into their bloodstream, their brain says, you need to eat more of this in order to sustain yourself. So many times they do, and we see these people who live in food deserts as obese, eating foods that have low value, but are stored away in the form of fat in their bodies. And these people's immune systems are compromised as a result of the poor nutrition.
Wow.
So a nutritional problem that compromises their immune system that leaves them susceptible to more severe cases.
Wow.
Peter, I haven't seen that written. What's that?
And on that note, our time is up.
Okay.
So we will continue this conversation as this whole terrible episode evolves. So you've been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. If you like this show, follow us on Twitter, All Exits Closed. Peter, thank you, and thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a wonderful day.
It's going to be fun. All right. Give me a call back, Cynthia. Hi, Cynthia. Hello.